Welcome to TA1, everything you want to know about adventure racing and then some. I'm your host, the legendary Randy Erickson, and should probably do something with this audio since we ended up talking a lot about music in this episode. But don't worry, we get into adventure racing eventually, you know how it goes here. So I know, don't be shocked, you're getting one 2 weeks in a row at the right time. So, yay for me. And I don't know. I don't really have anything to say. I guess once in a while I should say, you know, you can always go and review and rate in iTunes and Spotify and blah, 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 all the different ones. Although I don't think there's any casual AR people out there that are searching Spotify for Adventure Race podcasts, but hey, if they are, help you find them. So, yeah, that's it. Let's get this going. Get this uploaded so you get to listen to it tomorrow. Anyway, that's enough for me. Nobody else is around. They're all down in the basement working out, except for Chili, who's sleeping somewhere. So, remember, fast is slow. Don't take any chances, but no, don't take any risks, but take a few chances. I don't, whatever I say. Anyway, have fun, and I will see a handful of you in a couple of weeks in Virginia. So thanks for listening. Bye.
Hey, what's up, Randy? Can you hear me?
I can. Oh. Computer didn't lie. You are connected.
They do tell the truth.
Yeah, occasionally.
Yeah, cool, man. How you been?
Good. How are you?
Busy. I'm actually looking forward to this. This is a good excuse for me to not be swinging a hammer or painting walls right now.
No, for work or for fun?
Kind of for investment. My brothers and I, we have rental properties.
Oh, okay.
And we're just remodeling one right now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you know how that's like, what that's like.
Yes, I do. I've been on the roof all day putting on metal roofing. So.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Wow. I got the first part done, the first sheet. It's so I'm attaching the house to the barn, and as it attaches. Basically, there are four different roof lines on the gable coming together.
Wow, that's
yeah.
That's a heck of a tape measurement.
Yeah, so it's spent a lot of time making sure there's a lot of flashing and nothing's going to leak. But I think I got it. So
yeah. Okay,
the rest of it will go fast. You know, you start laying down 3 foot sheets. So.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, once you get that top part going. But yeah.
Yeah. So where are you at? Where do you live?
I live in the Metro Detroit area.
Okay.
Currently residing in Farmington Hills. Yeah. It's about 25 minutes northeast of or northwest of Detroit.
Okay, cool. So yeah. Are you doing all these renovations? Is Detroit coming back a little bit?
Yeah, it's quite amazing. You know, over the past 10 years, I've really seen. So I've had these properties with my brothers for about 20 years. Mm. And we've really seen Detroit kind of have its renaissance about 10 years ago. And it's really cool to watch, to see these dilapidated buildings being restored and, you know, just to really see the community kind of thrive again. Yeah. So we're doing our part by fixing up our properties and getting them to good quality tenants. So
cool. So was this a plan 20 years ago? Did you think, you know what, this is, things are cheap now and it's going to come back?
Yeah, I was foolish. I was like, hey, you know, remodel a few properties with my brothers and let them just kind of you know, have a passive income. And then little did I know how much work was involved in it. It's kind of like a full-time job sometimes.
Yeah, I think it really is. If you're, you know, because you got enough that you can't make any money if you have to hire stuff out.
Yeah, that's so true. And that was a very hard lesson to learn. But now, you know, had to learn all the hard stuff to save money. And fortunately, I feel, you know, quite skilled at just, I would say, like general home remodeling. Yeah. So
you can do a little of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah. If I was 25 years old, I would be learning to try to do everything, because in another 20 years, you could charge whatever you want for repairs, because nobody's going to be doing it.
Yeah. The physical element, everybody just wants to press a button and, you know, have it just appear, but it doesn't quite work that way when you're dealing with plumbing and electricity and so
all that good stuff. So, okay. So, I suppose we need to talk adventure racing, huh?
Yeah. Someone said that you had questions.
Oh, I never have questions. We're having a conversation.
Oh, sure.
Do you have questions?
No, I mean, I listened to your podcast with Jared, which is pretty cool. You know, especially on the heels of C2C, and
yeah,
that made me smile to hear his perspective a little bit deeper, and I'm excited to team up with him and kind of
that'd be cool.
Yeah. So
I'm talking to Sarah and Misty on Saturday, hopefully before happy hour starts for them. So,
well, it might be more entertaining afterwards.
Yeah, it might, but we'll at least start that way. So,
very good.
So, what was your background? How did you become one of these people?
Get into adventure racing?
Yeah.
Maybe you heard of this this race called the Barkley.
Yep.
Familiar. So late 2015, my brother George, he watched the documentary and said, "Hey man, you know, you really should watch this documentary." And I assume you're familiar with the Barkley Marathons documentary.
Yep.
So anyways, after watching that, it's just like, man, like I would love to do that race someday. And I feel like all those runners, like they know what they're doing. They just might not know where like they're really solid runners, but they may just not know where they're going. So fortunately, the algorithms of Facebook was listening in on our conversation, and one of the local race producers had advertised a mini adventure race that just included trekking and mountain biking. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, sweet, I'm pretty good at mountain biking and not a bad runner, but I have no idea what I'm doing in terms of orienteering. So I might as well go mess up my first race. Yeah. Ended up doing really well in the mountain bike portion because that's kind of my background. Mm-hmm. And then didn't do so well in the foot section. So I placed about 20 minutes ahead on the mountain bike section, and then the foot section ended up, I think I finished like fourth or fifth overall. And then I just happened to ask the one of the race producers if they knew anybody that I could study or who would be willing to mentor me. And they pointed to the guy standing right next to me, Jens Christensen. And he kind of took me under his wing and just really accelerated my learning curve. And I'm just really grateful to him for his generosity and always giving me tips and advice. And that really just kind of accelerated me on this path of you know, adventure racing.
Yeah. All right. So we got to go back a little bit because I put up a post last week about the Barkley.
That yeah.
I thought it was a stupid race. And I didn't get as much flack about it as I thought I would be, but I don't think the race part of it is dumb. I think it's all the how you got to get in and blah 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 and the trumpet and blah 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 and all that. So
yeah,
what is it? I mean, is it just because it's so hard that it interests you?
Yeah, really. I mean, I love the idea that only, I think right now, 15 or 16 people, I think 15,
yeah,
have finished it. I just like the idea of really testing myself and just really seeing what I'm made of, like, yeah. In a solo aspect, I mean, I love the team aspect of adventure racing, but when you have to pull off an epic event by yourself, I think that really, it draws so many parallels to other aspects of my life that I use as a foundation for living every day, really.
Yeah. So, okay. Elaborate.
Yeah. So,
Lisa, I ask you one word and I get to sit here and listen for a while. That's how it works.
You know, usually I'm pretty introverted, so for me to ramble on like this is maybe I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, remember, tens of people are listening.
Okay, all right, got it. So yeah, every day I think is, I really treat every day as an adventure race. Whether it's, you know, simple things like, I mean, my partner, she cooks primarily all the meals, and I'm grateful for that. Like, I can't do that. So she's kind of like my, really the unspoken teammate, because I would say 90% of the food I've ingested has been from her hand over the past year. So I'm basically, she has made me for who I am to a degree, and I view her as a teammate. So and then in other aspects, I'll take care of the house, and it doesn't matter how tired I am. If there's like an emergency, I'll be like, I just mentally get in the zone of, okay, the drain's backed up. I just pulled a 15-hour shift at the rental properties, and this is just a next leg of this adventure race for the day. So, it really defines my everyday, truly. And I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. Do you think, you say you're introverted, does that play into the, you know, wanting to do solo stuff?
Sort of, but not really. That it's just more of a logistical issue. I've been pining for teammates for which, as you know, is always kind of a challenge.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I've had some, you know, really great local people that are in the community take me under their wing and get me into the longer races, which I feel like is where I thrive. All the way through now racing with Jared and, you know, in Florida, which is just really cool to me. So,
yeah. So you said that you had a mountain bike background. How did you get started in that? Were you a stick and ball guy and then went to the solo stuff or?
No, I was a horrible baseball player. Really, you know, someone could throw they could lob a softball and I would just shy away from it. so that didn't work out, but really it was more of a pragmatic introduction because my school at the time was about 6 miles away and I lived in a very rural area. So I wouldn't always have a ride home after school or after like a track training. So I just started getting up in the morning and taking my squeaky mountain bike and would just ride 6 miles to school and then do training after school and then ride home and try to play some Super Mario Kart before I fell asleep.
So you were well-rounded. Cheap mountain bike, good video game.
Yeah, for sure. And then it slowly progressed. I ended up telling my mom one time, I was like, hey, there's this race down in Detroit I'd like to do, and it was a road race or a criterium. Mm-hmm. And she ended up taking me down there, and I won the public category on my mountain bike, which was kind of funny. But then someone pulled me out to the side and just said, hey, like, I think you need a coach. And I was receptive to that. So he got me into road cycling for a while. And then I jumped back into mountain biking a few years later and just started winning some of the local races. Then life happened, you know, I got shipped off to college, and ever since then I was just exercising, maintaining my fitness. But really, I'd say within the past 5 years, I decided to really devote more time to the things I cherish in life. And that is us, you know, racing, being athletic, and music.
No. Okay, music. So what do you play?
Yeah, I compose music for the piano.
Ah.
Which, shameless plug here, my album should be released within the next few months. It's all solo, all original. It's called The Chocolate Hotel. Super proud of it.
So does it fit into any genre?
I would say it's modern classical. It's kind of like a Rachmaninoff meets Radiohead.
Okay. I'll buy that.
There you go. Well, I'll give it to you for free.
I was just going to pirate it somewhere.
Yeah, I'll save you the trouble.
So, okay. You have two hobbies that are never going to make you any money.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? But they make me so happy, I can't shed them.
Well, that's, I mean, you know, I can live with that.
Yeah.
So have you always been musical? Was that?
Yes,
because you're probably pretty good.
I'll leave that up to you to decide, because I know music is somewhat in the ear of the beholder.
Yeah.
But I was self-taught when I was 14, and really sitting at the piano one day, kind of thinking about what my piano teacher had asked me like a year later. She's like, you know, what do you want to do with your life? And I was like, thinking like, I want to be a pianist. No, I want to be a cyclist. No, I want to be a pianist. No, I want to be a cyclist. And it wasn't until much, much later that I realized I don't need to make $1 million to do both. So
yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at in life.
Yeah. I can't imagine anything harder than trying to make a living playing music.
Actually, my partner is a professional pianist. So she truly inspires me to, I mean, that is literally all she does. So she's an incredible pianist, and she makes a pretty decent living herself. So it is possible.
Well, it's possible, but it's hard.
Oh, for sure. But you know what? She's been doing it her entire life. So for her, music is truly, like, I would say her first language. And Japanese and English is her second and third.
That's a lot of languages.
Yeah, for sure.
So see, I might have to, are you except for TA1. Are you a podcast guy?
I am. I'm a huge fan of Radiolab as well. Are you familiar with them?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So I just kind of love science, and I love their in-depth reporting. So
I have two that I think you'll really, really like. Mm. One's called Strong Songs, and it's a guy that will take anything from Fleetwood Mac to songs from Hamilton and spend an hour literally breaking them down into rhythms, chord progressions. I don't know any of that. My musical ability is to turn on Amazon, but it's just so fascinating. It's like, well, this one sounds like this because, he changes this fifth to a minor seventh, and it's like, well, I don't know what that means, but I understand it.
You understand that they're changing something. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Strong Songs. No, so that's one.
And the other one is Settling the Score, where they have gone through like the top 25 movie scores and broke them down into, themes and how they work and stuff. So both of them very, very interesting. And I don't know music, so it might be interesting to music people.
Well, I would say everyone has an innate music ability, even though they either don't accept it or they actively deny it. Mm-hmm. And I could elaborate on that if you want.
Yes.
So do you have a pet at all?
Yes, we have the chili dog.
Okay, the chili dog. All right. Yep. So when you were deciding what your chili dog was going to be named, how many names did you go through?
Zero, because when Paulette brought her home from Chile, what else are you going to name a dog from Chile? here's a better analogy. So we have our two birds. We have Stevie Ray and Jimmy Lee.
Okay.
So
are those based off of icons at all? Or?
Yes. Yep. So so Stevie Ray is Stevie Ray Vaughan. We had Stevie to start with. Mm-hmm. So that one will work for your analogy because we had to decide that name.
Yes, to a degree. So
yeah.
I iconic namescape aside, if you decide to name something, you are vocally projecting the sound. Mm-hmm. And in most cases I correlate it to like people naming their children and or their pets. And when you express that sound, usually you come to a point where you say that sounds right. Most people say that phrase or I like the sound of that. And that is innately your ear tethering into your desire of what you like to hear. So every time you say that name, you are literally singing a composition that you wrote.
Yeah. I get it.
So that's my theory.
That's a good theory. So you don't mind, we're talking about music. You're cool with that, right?
I'm cool with whatever you want to talk about. This is your podcast.
Because I never get to talk music with anybody. I can talk adventure racing all the time.
Right.
So who do you listen to?
Rachmaninoff and Radiohead.
Okay. I could have guessed, but
yeah.
So I mean, is that really what you listen to?
And a lot of NPR.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually when I get in my car, it's NPR all day. Sometimes I'll listen to Michigan radio. And a lot of times, to be frank, I'll listen to silence. Because I feel sometimes the most profound moments in music are the areas of silence, and I gravitate toward that.
So what you're saying is your favorite song is 4 minutes and 33 seconds?
Yes. It's a brilliant piece of work.
It is. See, I'm the opposite because too many years in construction, so I never have silence. I have real bad tinnitus. So, and you don't notice it when there's music. So, and it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't really bother me, but it's definitely there. It's definitely, I'd rather have, you know, music on in the background.
Mm-hmm. Some people have to have that. Personally, I don't. Maybe because I'm in the silence, sometimes I find myself composing in my head. So I fill that space without sound.
So, well, I mean, that makes total sense because, yeah, there's probably always music in your head.
Yeah, sometimes. And you know, to jump back to adventure racing, that is part of the aspect I enjoy in terms of racing solo. Because, you know, whether you're running or you're cycling or you're paddling, there's a tempo and a rhythm that is established. And sometimes my own compositions will just provide the backdrop for that continuous rhythmic pedal stroke, or that, you know, if I need to pick up the pace while I'm running, I'll dial into one of my compositions and say, okay, this is the tempo I need to be at. It's a strange fusion, but I almost can't avoid it because that it creeps up.
Yeah. Well, I think normal people do that by what they're listening to.
Yeah, which is why they have headphones in. And
yeah, it works.
For sure.
How do you compose music?
The act of it or just the creation of it?
Well, both.
So primarily at the piano. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Sometimes it's just, it usually starts very simply with maybe 2-3 notes or like a small passage. And I look at it as a glimpse into kind of like a very foggy windshield where you play the first note or two and something has come by and, you know, just cleared the windshield away just a little bit and allows you to peer into this whole other world. And the more notes that you start to explore, it begins to unfold in front of you. And so in a way, I don't feel like I'm really composing or creating music. I'm just documenting what's already out there. And I just happen to be witness to it.
How do you not just play things that you've heard? When you're composing, I don't understand it. How you can play something that's never been played before. Those notes have probably been played in that order at some time, but it's going to be a different context. I mean, I just.
Oh, for sure. Well, that's the beauty of it, is the backdrop of music is primarily math and, I mean, infinite possibilities exist. Yeah. So you could play one note and even the way you strike that note has probably like 100 different ways.
Yeah.
To, and sometimes like my partner and I will just test each other. We'll just play one note at different intensities and we'll see if we can guess the song.
Wow, that sounds like a wild Saturday night.
Oh yeah, we really know how to throw down over here. Yeah.
Okay, here's a question that I actually have asked musical people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is harder, and can you do either one, And my two examples are always like, you know, apparently Paul McCartney woke up with the whole melody of Yesterday, which apparently isn't quite true, but that's, you know, that's the legend.
Mm-hmm.
So, or the guys that went to Tin Pan Alley and literally sat in an office for, you know, 8 hours a day and ended up writing Save the Last Dance for Me. Mm-hmm. I mean, those seem like so different to make music. One where it just comes to you and one where you just work on it all day. Can you do either one?
No, I prefer to work organically. So I would say I'm more in line with Paul McCartney.
Oh, there's my quote. Richard Lee Sparks equals Paul McCartney.
I would not say that. I'm sure there's much better substance to glean than that. I would say organically at the piano is the first step, but then it goes through many seemingly countless iterations. And again, it's that windshield where I feel like, okay, that's the universe that is in front of me and I'm accurately capturing it through sound. And I can tell when I get off track where I like step into another world, I'm like, that's not quite working. I need to go back to the beginning and start over and you know, just try again, really.
You just know it.
You can kind of sense when something it feels right and when it doesn't feel right. It would be like, you know, listening to a classical station and then in the middle of, you know, a Chopin fantasy or, you know, some techno music interjects. It's like, okay, that doesn't quite, that's not interesting, quite. But it doesn't quite feel right.
Yeah,
because it creates a scene, you know.
Yeah, it could work, but it probably won't.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Frankly, music for me is very visual, and sound to me, like when I'm playing, I feel like I'm not just creating sound, but I feel like I'm watching a film. So it's very storytelling based music, even though there's no words or lyrics.
Yeah. So like almost like a film score without the film.
Yeah.
And I mean, you say you see it, but is that like you really see it?
Yeah. Actually, that's how my album was created. Because over the course of about 5 years, I noticed there were 10 compositions in my repertoire that seemed to have the same character pop up over and over. And then the more I started like dissecting the work, I was like, wow, this person's European. This person went to war at some point. He has a wife and a daughter. And I would like to say that is my imagination, but I feel like it was just a piece of history that I happened to have a glimpse into through the sounds of the piano. I know that sounds kind of weird, but that really is how I feel about it.
Yeah, it does, but that doesn't mean it's not right.
You're like, get off those shrooms, Richard.
Hey, whatever works. Right. Works for you.
So yeah.
Have you ever been just playing something and your partner walks in and she's like, "Wow, that's really good. Where'd you learn that?"
Yeah, conversely, I did that with her the other. I'd say probably like last week. Came home probably around 10:30, 11 at night from working on the properties, and I was like, wait, what is that? And I was like, is that yours? And she's like, yeah, I'm working on something. And she played, she was recording it. So fortunately she played it back for me. And it's just interesting because we know each other's music. And we can kind of immediately sense that that wasn't from another composer. That was from our heart.
Yeah. Well, you know, music, it's, I mean, you know, I can look at a board and tell you it's 2x4 from 100 yards away. You can look at, you can hear music and you just know, mm-hmm. right? It's what you're good at.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It does take some training, but, you know, just like anything, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, how long did you, take lessons or have real training?
Over the span of, I'd say, about 5 years. So when I was about 14 to 19, and then I just couldn't afford lessons anymore. And then I was also going to college and just really couldn't afford it. So I took it upon myself to self-study.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. was that hard to, or were you just, I mean, you were just that much into it that it was easy to keep studying and practicing and learning.
I was infatuated with it. Yeah. I mean, when I graduated, all throughout college, I was playing, but particularly when I graduated college and I had more of like a normal, I guess, time frame. I mean, I would practice for like 6 to 8 hours sometimes and just really working on the details and trying to figure out how to actually compose, like notate my compositions onto paper, which can be very difficult if you don't have like a mentor training you, because you're trying to quantify sound. And, you know, music isn't just, I mean, some music nowadays, you have that rhythmic tempo that just is like a dead beat and it's just looped.
Yeah.
But the music I like to create, has retardando and accelerando and crescendos and decrescendos. So it slows down sometimes within the same meter. And that's not always easy to document.
Yeah, it sounds like a real learning experience. So, All right, just we're gonna get off music. Don't worry, people. But
yeah, sorry guys. Music lesson over. Let's talk adventure racing.
No, I'm not done yet because I want to know I want to know a little bit the nuts and bolts of actually recording and putting out a CD. And, where do you hope to get it played? And because I mm-hmm. went through all that stuff, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago doing DVDs, learning how to master mm-hmm. and, where do you go to get them made and distribution and all that stuff. But so, mm-hmm. I mean, what do you do with music nowadays?
Well, plenty. I mean, it's everywhere. Yeah, but how do you get there, right? What are the channels?
Well, is it one of those things that like, as long as you're not trying to make money, you can get it out a lot easily?
No, I think there's ways to do it smartly without having to give it away for free all the time.
Yeah.
Personally, my plan, so my album is what I bill as a listening experience to get my true intent as an artist. I encourage people to take it in as a film. And how I've presented it is, there's obviously original music, but each song has a written story attached to it that is similar to taking in like an ebook with sound. So as you listen to the music, you're reading the story of that song. And the main goal is to, use the words to create the constructs based off your own life experience. So if, for instance, I ask you to think of a flower, what is Randy's flower?
Right now, I would say a red orchid.
Okay, all right. So you added two things in there. You added color and the flower itself. So mine is a purple tulip. So the words create the scene, but the music gives the color of the scene. And all 10 of these songs, they thread together to create a larger narrative. And that's the story of the Chocolate Hotel.
Yeah. And would we listen, get done listening to the whole record? Will we know why it's called the Chocolate Hotel?
Absolutely. In fact, you'll have an idea of why it's called the Chocolate Hotel right from the beginning. But like any good story, I hope the climax is, really touches your heart. So,
yeah, I'm intrigued.
Well, I can't wait to share it with you.
And really, isn't that kind of the best music if it, people are intrigued by it?
Yeah. Well, and hopefully moved. Really, that's my, I've spent years refining this and admittedly have re-recorded it. I think I'm on like number four because I wasn't happy with the previous recordings. Either it was the technical aspects with the microphones, it was the piano, or it was just me not being able to play the sound that I wanted to create, because they're technically very difficult pieces.
Yeah.
So I've literally spent years, what feels almost like a decade now, getting to the point to where I can actually play them. So
is recording an album sort of like editing a film? You never finish. It just gets taken away from you.
No, that was actually one of the reasons why I wanted to do this solo, because I've been a part of a lot of other people's projects where I feel like they just kind of gave up and tossed it out there. And I didn't want to do that. My philosophy was to go big or go home. And this is my statement.
Usually I ask this question about racing, but we'll take it to the music. What would be the winning scenario for this album?
That people enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
get out there and they listen to it and enjoy it.
Yeah, truly. And I also hope it gives people, I would say, a chance to reflect and help identify moments in their life through loss, where they can relate to it. It seems to be hopeful, because I had a CD version that I guess will be a one-off, but I didn't release it online because I wanted to refine the sound quality. But the few people that actually have listened to it have followed up with me and expressed that they that it really touched them. So that is priceless to me, truly.
Yeah. Sounds like a win.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see in about the next 2-3 months or now. It should be launched on the website, and it should be available for download as an ebook and as a complete interactive album.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. I'd say I'd put the links in the show notes, but we'll just wait till it's out, then we'll get the word out. So
for sure. I'll save your post on Facebook and then comment on it just to repopulate Facebook later.
Yeah. Hey, that's how it's done.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So now here's where my experience of, I don't know what, 6 years of podcasting comes into it with check this segue out. Mm-hmm. Which were you better at quicker, playing music or riding your bike?
Oh man, that is a tough one. They both kind of came about at the same time. I would say playing music.
So, but you did have that. You did have that. You were pretty good on the bike right away.
Yeah, but I don't want to say I just hopped on a bike and it was all magic. I think just the sheer act of surviving the everyday, you know, getting to school and riding my bike home just inherently was training that I didn't know I was actively doing.
Yeah.
Whereas with piano, once I played the first sounds of the piano, I felt it was, this goes back to my introversion. I felt like the sound it was creating was giving me the voice that I couldn't quite speak through my own mouth. I had millions of different thoughts, but only one mouth to speak them with. And with the piano, I could create a universal language to communicate my feelings and thoughts with.
Cool. Oh, all right. Adventure racing. So
yeah.
When was that first adventure race?
That was in late 2015, and I'm going to give a shout out to Lost Arrow Sports for hosting it. And then the next major one was, I want to say, with Michigan Adventure Race. And then I got a chance to meet Barbara Nice May and Brenda Carlson Brown and Eric Olson. They were looking for a fourth person for Untamed New England. Mm-hmm. And
heard of it.
Yeah. No. You don't say.
Yeah. I'm going to say you can't see me, but I literally have an Untamed shirt on.
Oh, right on. Hey, I was wearing my hat today. I love their apparel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they took me under their wing and, you know, really showed me a lot about basically expedition racing. And after that race, I was really kind of hooked on the longer races. Yeah. So
was that the last Untamed?
Yes. Yeah, I think in 2018, I believe.
Sounds right. It's like, how can we remember, right?
Yeah, I know they all.
Yeah.
They're still there, but the time just kind of disappears.
Yeah. Somebody will ask me how many races have you gone to? And I literally cannot come up with the same number every time.
Oh man, I can only imagine how many races you've gone to. You're at every race I go to, and I know you go to more races than I go to. Yeah.
It's somewhere between 25 and 30 expedition races. So.
Wow. Wow. Well, you're going to be in Oregon, so that'll be great to see you there.
Yep. I'm going to Shenandoah next month, mm-hmm. and then Oregon. So.
Okay. Right on.
Yeah. And I get to go to Maine for that one too. So.
Oh man, I'm going to miss seeing those two, Shenandoah and Maine.
Yeah, they should be pretty good. But it's hard to travel. I mean, if you're racing, it's kind of hard to justify traveling that far for a 24-hour race. I mean, really.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I almost thought that, but that's how I met Jared. And now I'm just thinking, man, that was just so worth it.
Well, I mean, but, you know, you can't go every month. Well, or you can, but.
Yeah.
Most people don't. What do I want to say? My output per race is a lot lower than your guys, so I survive a little easier.
Just a tad different when you have a car.
A little bit, yeah. It is.
Yeah.
It's like, well, let's see. I'll just drive 2 hours back to the hotel because it'll be easier to work there.
That sounds lovely on day three.
my thought process is a little different. It's like, yeah, let's just do that part.
Yeah, for sure.
So Untamed, I mean, what are some of the other ones you've done?
Yeah, then some of the major ones were, I guess some of the highlights were Nationals. Two local racers, the Michigan Racing Addicts, Michael DeBolt and Phil Schrader. They needed a third racer for their team, and Phil reached out to me, and I was like, yes, I would love to race Nationals with you. So they were kind of like my idols in the local community, always winning these races. And I was just really gracious that they reached out to me. So first year we ended up racing together, we placed first in our division for the open division at Nationals. Super proud of that. Eighth overall. And then the next year we did it again, except we increased our placing to fourth overall. So beyond that, I would say then I went to Scotland for ITERA. A team out there needed a fourth person, and we just happened to have a strange connection with Matt Green, who is also a video producer such as yourself. And yeah, that race was super hard. Some of the sections that were supposed to be pack rafting sections, they ended up with real kayaks. So we're traversing across landscapes that should have been pack rafts, but instead we're lugging these heavy plastic boats around.
The hallmark of adventure racing, dragging a kayak or a canoe through places where it shouldn't be drug.
Yeah, those boats, they definitely saw a whole new world. And then you know, this past summer had a huge triumph. Have you heard of the Crusher?
Yes.
Up in Upper Peninsula here?
Yep.
So it lives up to its name. I mean I did it with my good friend Nathan LaRaza, and it's kind of like a time trial based event. So the first time we did it together, we placed first for that time of the day. Although it took us like 26 hours. And then it's a cumulative time event. So they have four events of 250 miles, 100 miles, and a 50 mile course, and then a 50 mile run course. And at a last ditch effort, I decided to try to complete it. I think I got third on the overall run, but set two course records for the 100 and the 50, and then placed third on the 250 miler. But collectively, I edged out the second place person, I think, by 7 hours overall. Yeah. So that was just a real, that was kind of like my personal bike Barkley. Just another test, really.
Yeah. It is a little test. So you're pretty good on a bike. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just do bike events? Does it not push you hard enough?
Yeah, that's basically it. You know, it's interesting to bike race for like 45 minutes to like maybe 2 hours. Those are fast and furious, and I used to love them, but now I kind of think of my hands a little bit more.
Yeah.
For piano.
Yeah.
And so.
I can remember having like no skin on the palm of my hands and trying to work. It sucks.
Yes. Yes, it does.
So in adventure racing, how close do you think you are to your peak? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I always think I have room to grow, personally. I mean, I train regularly, even when I'm like working on my rental properties. I kind of make sure I train while I'm working. So sometimes I'll wear my 40-pound pack, you know, while I'm slinging paint on the walls, or, you know, just getting down and pulling nails off the floor or something, or ripping a floor up. I mean, that's all just physical.
Yep.
Yeah. And when you do it for like 15 hours straight, it's, it feels like you just did an adventure race.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was bike racing and was pretty good, I mean, I was working construction 8 hours a day, and I always really considered it the fact that I would start training at a tired. And, yeah. And, you know, it was just, you know, you're getting a better workout because you're already starting tired.
So. Yeah. Yeah, totally. You know, it's interesting. The other day I was like, wow, I haven't done like, you know, technically push-ups, but all the getting up and getting down like was like a super long yoga session.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah. I definitely think I'd be very curious to know the adventure racers that are like that actively work all day, like, you know, using their hands, versus adventure racers that you know, I don't worry.
No, here that are engineers, because they're all freaking engineers.
Well, yeah,
there are a lot of engineers.
Yep, that's. I'm thinking of my teammate Mike. He was a retired engineer. Phil is a logistical coordinator or analyst. Yeah, when their job is done, they have to like get out and do physical.
So I don't think there's a lot that do blue collar, for lack of a better word, or basically t-shirt. But and I know that's a real generalization, and but by the same token, I couldn't sit and be an engineer for $1 million. It would kill me to do it. So,
oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, there's so, well, you have such a great job. I mean, there's so much to see. I mean, I would think you're very fortunate to have found your niche in this community. And, you know, we all enjoy seeing you and seeing what you produce. So,
you know, nobody likes me. They just don't think they're lost. And I am okay with that. I will take that as a validation that you like me. And I know it's just because you don't think you're lost.
I don't know, Randy. If I start slinging hugs your way, which I know I have, I think that says something about, you know, how I appreciate you.
Well, we can win in Oregon, because I got shot number two yesterday, so it's going to be hugging time.
Oh, very good. Congratulations. Yeah. I'm really hoping to be vaccinated before Oregon, but Michigan is, we'll see.
They're a little slow rolling it out.
Yeah. You know, my age as well puts me in the next tier.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Well, advantages of being old.
Hey,
take what we can. So. All right, so we'll wrap this up a little bit, but so you got Oregon coming up. Are you looking at, you got anything else on the schedule yet, or anything you're looking at long term?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started doing this, right when I was aware of that first, that this was actually a major sport, which seems so weird to think that I only started 5 years ago. Yeah. Once I heard about the World Series events, I mean, I would love to race on the world stage. And the cool thing is, I feel like I finally found a teammate in Jared that has that same desire. So I'm hopeful that we'll actively work together. And I'm really looking forward to racing with Melody and Dylan Andrews. Mm-hmm. Because we had briefly talked about racing Spain together, but I think we're going to see how Oregon goes.
And then decide from there. There's a lot of things between now and October that have to be decided.
Yep. Yeah, so, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, to answer your question, those are my main goals. Like really, I would love to race against Nathan and their team.
Yeah.
They're my idols right now. I would just love to be on the same stage with them, even though they'll probably beat us, but that's okay too.
Yeah, you know what? They're old. They're headed for the fall someday. So yeah. Hey, might as well be you. Somebody's gotta do it.
Yeah. Well, I won't. I'll bite my tongue in that one.
Okay. All right. So you gonna do a workout or play a little music when we get done here?
When we get done here, I'm going to order some more gear for Expedition Oregon, which I think will be. I shouldn't even say this. I was going to say it's going to be like the second to last thing I actually need to purchase, but I'm sure there's going to be like a million other things I need to acquire.
Yeah, it's kind of the fun part and kind of the sucky part. It's like, oh, yeah, I really need one of those.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't, but I really need one of those.
Right. Well, the cool thing about Expedition Oregon is, if you have everything for that race, you have what I mean.
Yeah,
you're set. Almost for life. So,
yep.
I guess get it out of the way now, so I can actually do these races without having to really think about it anymore in terms of acquiring gear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a pain to get it, but once you got it, if you take care of it, it's gonna last a long time, so you'll be good.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
So, All right. Well, I'll let you go order some gear.
Okay, awesome, Randy. Hey, I thank you so much for having me on. Been a fan. Really, I think it's a privilege to be on your podcast. So,
my privilege to get to talk to you guys and. You know, really get to know you a little better because, there's not that much time at races to hang out. So,
yeah, you mean,
I didn't know you played music. Now I do.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, we only had like, 10 minutes together at the end of C to C and maybe a hug at the cauldron.
I know. Bring your piano next time.
That's like required gear.
Yeah. All right. I think maybe we should end it now.
Yeah. Sure. Here, I'll do the closing arguments. Thank you so much. Okay. Really appreciate it and can't wait to see how this turns out.
All right. Thanks.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Randy.
Bye.
All right, man.
Bye.
Be good. Bye-bye.